I've always had to be the interpreter between my family and my friends. Like my cousins from Hazard. I go there in the summer, and sometimes they visit me, and my friends would be like, what's he talk? What did he just say? And I literally would have to interpret. I'll give you an example. Here's a couple of nouns. Pitcher and femme. Now, you think you know what that means, maybe, or maybe the second one you don't. I'll tell you what it means to my cousins. If you're going to take a pitcher, you got to have some femme. That's what it means. And then you can add words to it, like this year and add air. Because if you're going to take this year picture, you need to add air femme. And then my Uncle Johnny had, no, there's another word, the word hard. Let's pull that up. You think you know what that means. You don't. You think that has to do with concrete or steel or somebody's head. Hard. No, that's how my cousins secured employment. They would tell you they got hard down at the factory. And I like that one because you can change the first letter and put T there, and then you can say I'm tarred because I got hard down at the factory. I'm telling you, I've had to interpret all my life. My Uncle Johnny had three favorite words. Chevrolet, which was what Dale Earnhardt drove. Mom and M's, which is everyone who's at mom's house with her. And flares, which are roses or tulips or daisies. So if Uncle Johnny put it all in a sentence, he would say, my Chevrolet's been up on blocks so long that Mom and them's done planted flares in it. It's not really funny having to interpret for you all. So today, one you're familiar with, good Lord willing, Creek don't write. You know what it means in general. It means I'll be over or I'll do what I said I'd do, lest circumstances keep me from it. That's what it means, generally speaking. I like the phrase. Actually, I love the first half because it's biblical. Don't care for the second half because it's not biblical. Matter of fact, Jesus' brother said this. You ought to say, if it is the Lord's will, we'll do this or that. That's good Lord willing. You won't find the creek don't rise in the Bible because if the good Lord's willing, it doesn't matter whether the creek rises or not. If the good Lord's willing, no matter what your circumstances are, if the good Lord's willing, no matter what it looks like, good Lord's willing, doesn't matter if it rained for 40 days and 40 nights, if the good Lord's willing, it doesn't matter whether the creek rises or not. So, this is a cool sermon for me because it's my favorite story in the New Testament. Next week's one of my favorites in the Old Testament, so I'm jacked up about today and next Sunday. And I'll do this in three scenes. There's three different things going on here. And I gave them all song titles so I could remember as I was writing my sermon. So the first scene, we'll call it Jailhouse Rock, and it's in Acts chapter 12, verse 1. It was about this time that King Herod arrested some who belonged to the church, intending to persecute them. He had James, the brother of John, put to death with the sword. Actually had his head cut off. When he saw that this met with approval among the Jews, he proceeded to seize Peter also. He was going to cut his head off. This happened during the festival of unleavened bread. After arresting him, he put him in prison, handing him over to be guarded by four squads of four soldiers each. Man, you talk about overkill. Herod intended to bring him out for public trial after the Passover. So Peter, here's the key verse. Peter was kept in prison, but the church was earnestly praying to God for him. But Peter was kept in prison, but the church was earnestly praying to God for him. This is a great story. If I wasn't doing this Southern sayings, I would have called this the ultimate cage match. This is Herod's prison versus the church's prayers. This is what God wants to happen versus what King Herod wants to happen, and we're going to see who's going to win that. And the church, they're praying for him, and the church, this church has been through difficult times. Every church has. Our church has. I have when I first came to our church. Everybody goes through difficult periods of time. And this church, one chapter previous, if you want to read it on your own, they went through a famine. And they had to take up offering after offering because they weren't able to meet all the needs. Big famine. So they're dealing with that. This king, this wicked king, starting to put all of their leaders in jail. Put James, who was a key leader, in jail, took his head off. Now Peter's there, and they're going to take his head off too. It's a life lesson. When opportunity comes to the door, opposition comes with it. So let me mention verse 5 one more time. Peter was kept in prison, but the church was earnestly praying for him. Now, if it were you, and you were in prison, and you were going to have your head removed from your shoulders the next day, what would you be doing the night before?
I'd be repenting of every wrong thing I ever done, first of all.
Do you know what Peter was doing? Check this verse out. The night before Herod was to bring him to trial, Peter was sleeping between two soldiers, bound with two chains, sentries to guard. Fix that verse. That can't be right, rocks. Fix that. Peter was doing what? Listen, when I point at you, you say sleeping. Peter was doing what? Peter was pacing the floor? Peter was popping Tums? Peter was chugging Alka-Seltzer? Peter was going through every bad thing he ever done and begging God to forgive him? Sleeping! How in the world can the night before you're going to be killed, you just be snoozing? Sleeping between two soldiers. I made myself a note. You know, there's not enough Lunesta in the pharmacy. There's not enough Ambien on earth that you and I could sleep on that night. And after I wrote that, like a week and a half ago, I made myself a side note. You know what, Mark? You maybe shouldn't say that because you've seen lots of people sleep in church through the years. I've seen people sleep in all kinds of situations. I found a video of some people falling asleep in church. It reminded me of some of y'all. Check it out. Just want to pour water down in her mouth right there. I like this guy. He gets caught. She's trying hard. Look at the guy who's right. He just gave up. Some of y'all do this. You pretend like you're worshiping when you're out. Uh-oh. You don't know him, but this guy named John at my old church, he worked hard, so I understood it. I even told him once that, hey, if the best thing in the church we can do for you is offer you a comfortable place to sleep, then come on, brother. But he sat in the front row. This was my first ministry. That you take that to heart. And he would fall asleep every Sunday, every sermon. Sometimes he was asleep before I ever started preaching, so it wasn't all my fault. And so I told June, I said, listen, I can overcome a lot of stuff, but can you all sit in the back? I mean, I keep looking at him thinking, man, I must be boring people to death. And she's like, yeah, I guess we can, but we've always sat up here. I said, well, then just stay here and I'll deal with it. Well, somebody told her she should take some old Limburger cheese and bring it to church, and when he fell asleep, just wave it under his nose like smelling salts, and then he'd pop up. So she brought some cheese to church. And as soon as I started preaching, he went to sleep. He's like, he's out. So she waves the cheese, and he goes, boom! And I'm like giving her the thumbs up, and then he says real loud, Junie, you got to get your feet off my pillow. Yeah. I did a series years ago. I loved it. I called it Nighty Night. And I had 2 months of sermons about people going to sleep in the Bible. It's interesting. And one of my favorites was Acts chapter 20. If you want to know why I think the Bible's so cool, it's stuff like this. Acts 20. Seated in a window was a young man named Eutychus, who was sinking into a deep sleep as Paul talked on and on. He preached till midnight. Now, it didn't tell us when he started, but the inference is he started normal church time Sunday morning. And preached till midnight. You all are spoiled. If Jimmy preached or Charlie preached or me or Derek, you 30 minutes tops, you're spoiled. If I preach till midnight, none of you would be left after 1 o'clock today. He preached till midnight, and then this kid named Eutychus fell asleep as Paul talked. Look at the Bible. Paul talked on and on. When he was sound asleep, he fell to the ground from the third story and was picked up dead. My dad said they called him Eutychus because Eutychus too, if you'd have fell out of that window. Now, this event is not nearly as dramatic that we're reading, but I love this. He's sleeping in between two soldiers the night before he's supposed to die. Oh, man, I could preach a whole sermon on that point, and I would call it, be careful what you do with the in-between. You ever had to sleep in between? I'm not referring to the kids jumping in bed with you when they were little. I like that. I'm talking about sleeping in between. I'm talking about in between. I don't know how this is going to turn out and how it turns out, but I got to sleep in between. I don't know if this situation is going to get better or the doctor's going to say next time, but I got to sleep in between. I'm in a tight spot, and I don't know if I'm going to make it out. I got to sleep in between. Peter's come a long way, man. He was in a boat one night with the disciples, and it's rocking because of the storm, and they're like, we're going to die. We need Jesus. Where's Jesus? Jesus was in the bottom of the boat, and what was he doing, church? Sleeping. Sleeping. Man, God has a word for you. I can do more while you're sleeping than you can do while you're straining. We live in the in-between. We say goodbye to that person we love. We know we're going to say hello to them again. But now we're in between. What do you do in the in-between? You go to the doctor and he says, I got bad news for you. It's going to be surgery, but it's going to be 2 months out. I'm in between. I got to trust, have faith, work, move on, sleep, live. Starting good is important. Finishing well is important. I think that it's very important what we do with the in-between. In-between jobs. In-between relationships. In-between churches. I'm in between the cradle with my kids and the car keys and now college. I'm in between my child's struggle with addiction and their next relapse. What am I going to do while I'm the in-between? On the night before his execution, he's sleeping. In between two soldiers. That moves us to scene two. We'll borrow an Alabama song and we'll call this Angels Among Us. Verse 7. Suddenly an angel of the Lord appeared and a light shone in the cell. He struck Peter on the side, woke him up. Quick, get up, he said. And the chains fell off Peter's wrist. Then the angel said to him, put on your clothes and sandals. And Peter did so. Wrap your cloak around you and follow me, the angel told him. Peter followed him out of the prison, but had no idea that what the angel was doing was really happening. He thought he was seeing a vision. They passed the first and second guards and came to the iron gate leading to the city. It opened for them by itself, and they went through it. When they had walked the length of one street, suddenly the angel left him. Then Peter came to himself and said, now I know without a doubt the Lord has sent his angel, rescued me from Herod's clutches and from everything the Jewish people were hoping would happen. It's an angel jailbreak, and it's pretty cool. But the sequence is important, and you lose this when you don't have the original language. So let me help explain this. The sequence of this is important. Quick, get up, and the chains fell off Peter's wrist. The natural response or sequence would be the opposite. It would read, then the chains fell off Peter's wrist, so he got up. Now, this is important. Again, quick, get up. And the chains fell off Peter's wrist. That's not what we want. We want to know it's going to get easier. And when we feel free and when everything's just right, then we'll step forward and do what God wants. You don't get to choose that. Obedience comes before freedom. You get up,
then the chains fall off. For all the people who have ever said to me, when I get my financial house in order, preacher, I'm going to start giving to the church. No, you won't. Because you start. You obey, then the freedom comes. You get up, you do what you're supposed to do for the Lord, then the good feeling comes. You do what you need to do, then everything that is right comes. Not beforehand. Obedience comes before freedom. And Peter, he doesn't question any of it. He just gets up and he goes. You and I, we'd be like, who are you? I need some identification. I can't really believe you're an angel. Where are we going? You haven't told me anything. Where are we going? How do I know this is all right? None of that from Peter. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. He didn't know the plan. And then verse 8, I highlighted this because to me this is my new definition of faith right here. The angel said to him, put on your clothes and sandals, and Peter did so. Wrap your cloak around you and follow me, the angel told him. Here's a new definition for faith. Faith is getting dressed even when you don't know where you're going. That's it right there. Now, I'm all for knowing where I'm going, but I'm okay with not knowing too. I've only fell in love with Google Maps in the last 6 months. I'm more of a Lewis and Clark guy. I like to explore and make everybody in the car mad. But now, my time is, I guess it's more valuable to me, I guess. I don't know, but I don't want to be driving all around downtown Indy when I could have just listened to that Siri, Sarah, lady, whatever her name is, tell me, hey, turn right. So I do that now. Back in the day, when I was doing revivals all over the place, you couldn't get directions on your phone. So I would just wing it. And especially if I'd been to a place, I had this overconfident sense of pride. Now, I've been there before. I can get there again. No problem. Well, I'm supposed to go to this church in Kentucky and sing and preach. Oh, I had been there one time and talked to the preacher, and he said, it'll take you a good 2 hours to get here, Mark. You're going to start singing at 7. Well, I looked at my clock, and I got time. I left at 10 till 5. So it's going to take you 2 hours to get, well, I got 2 hours and 10 minutes. I don't need any time ahead of time. So I take off for Kentucky, and I'm driving down in the hollers, and man, oh man, everything's starting to look the same. Like, man, I don't remember that at all. And I keep trying. You can't call anybody down there anyway. No service. So I looked at my car radio clock, and it's 6:45. I'm supposed to sing at 7. I got no idea where I'm at. So I pull into this old country store. There was a dog laying on the porch, and there was a dog inside eating out of a box of Twinkies. That's when you know you're in the country. And I swear, there's this old boy in this rocker, and he had it all the way back. His feet were up on a Cracker Barrel. And he had a big old chaw of Red Man in his right cheek and a big old Folgers can. And he was just spitting to beat the band. And I said, excuse me, sir, what's the quickest way to Milford, Kentucky? He went, pff. Are you walking or are you driving? I'm driving. He went, that is the quickest way. Thank you for your help, sir. Appreciate that. I'm okay with directions. I am. I've not always been the best at following them, even if they're there, but I'm telling you, this in-between period, Sometimes I don't know whether to turn right or left. I don't. But I do know that the Lord wants me to get up and go. Times where preparation and planning are good, but sometimes you can't do either. I like this. Look at verse 10. It opened the gate for them by itself, and they went through it. Peter hadn't said a word. He's just following. Now, he thinks this is some kind of dream. But then he wakes up and comes to himself, and he thought, I just got out of jail. So now I need to get out of here and go somewhere. That's the last scene we'll close with. I'll call it Somebody's Knocking. Should I Let Him In? This is my favorite part of the story, and it's why it's one of my favorite in the New Testament. Then Peter came to himself,
and said, "Now I know without a doubt the Lord has sent his angel and rescued me from Herod's clutches and from everything the Jewish people were hoping would happen." When this had dawned on him, he went to the house of Mary, the mother of John. This is where they're praying for him at the beginning of our message. Went to the house of Mary, where many people had gathered and were praying for Peter to get out. Peter knocks at the outer entrance, and a servant named Rhoda came to answer the door. When she recognized Peter's voice, she was so overjoyed, she ran back without opening it. Dude just busted out of prison. He needs in the house. They're praying for him to get out of prison. He's standing at the door, and she looks and goes, "Oh, it's you," and leaves the door shut. Goes and tells everybody else, and they tell her, after she says, "Peter's at the door, you're out of your mind." When she kept insisting that it was so, they said, "Well, must be his angel." In other words, he died. But Peter kept on knocking. When they opened the door, they saw him. They were astonished. This cracks me up. This is for all those churches that have prayed for rain, and then when it rained, there was no acknowledgement or thanks to God for the rain. For all of those Christians who have prayed and prayed, and God answered their prayer clearly, but they're still praying because they were looking the wrong direction, or they just couldn't believe that it happened the way it happened. I have 4 children in my house. I knew each child by their knock. I did. They all knocked differently. Jasmine, my oldest daughter, was very polite. Just a gentle knock on the door, bedroom door. Her knock spoke to me. Her knock says, "I love you, Dad, and I respect you. And if you had the time, you'd come out here and you'd talk to me." I love that. Not her brother. Hey! Hey! Anybody in there? Hey! And then Buzz, she knocked to rhythm of songs. Always has. It's how I learned gospel music. She'd knock. That's deep and wide. It would always be a song. And then Jayla, the youngest, she wouldn't knock. You didn't even know she was at the door until 3 weeks later when she said something she overheard in a conversation that she wasn't supposed to hear. Now, I wonder, living in relationship with God, can you tell when it's Him? Because according to the Bible, He knocks. You've been leaving Him on the other side of the door. He's knocking. Sometimes I'll open the door and it looks like trouble, but it's not. It's training. It's why you better be careful praying for patience. I would not encourage you to pray for patience. I wouldn't. I don't. I'm afraid to. I'm being honest. I try not to pray for patience because I know exactly what God's going to send to the door if I do. He's going to send something that will get on my nerves quickly. He's going to send a bad driver in front of me on 37 North who's going to be holding me up. And then when I pass them to get in front of them and go slow to hold them up, I'll notice the Hillcrest Christian Church license plate on the front of their car. That's what he'll do to me. It's happened before. You may not like the package your prayer request shows up in when it comes to your door, knock, knock. So let's finish this. Peter comes to the prayer meeting. They've been praying, "Lord, let him out. Lord, let him out. Let Peter out of that prison, Lord. Prison, let him out, Lord. Open the doors. Have him walk through, Lord. Amen." Now, I understand them being skeptical. I do. Because they prayed for James, too, and off went his head. So I'll give them credit. Prayed for James, didn't work out. Now they're praying for Peter. I hope this doesn't make you look down on me, because I have grown since then. When I was 14 and my grandma got cancer, I prayed for her, I guarantee you, in a way no junior high boy ever prays. Morning, noon, and night. And I was convinced in all my heart, the Lord's going to do exactly what I need Him to do right now. And it didn't go that way. And then the next Sunday after she died, my dad is in the pulpit asking for prayers for my buddy, same age as me, whose mom has cancer. And I didn't have a good heart about it. I didn't. I sat there and I thought, I'm not praying for her. I'm not. And shame on me if I didn't think, what if God says yes to her, but he said no to my grandma? Shame on me. So, I'll give these people credit, man. They prayed for James. They prayed hard for James, and he got killed, and now they're praying for Peter. So I'll give him credit for that. That's where the credit stops, because he's out there knocking on the door. And I bet it was more like Jared. Hey! Hey! It's me! It's me! And they send a servant girl to the door named Rhoda. I think that's Mary Tyler Moore's sister. That's the only Rhoda I know. But their prayer request is standing on the other side of the door. So she recognizes his voice. She's so overjoyed. She tells the church Peter's at the door. This is crazy to me. It was easier for them to believe that he had died and his angel came? That was easier to believe than God let Peter out and Peter's standing out there? In the beginning of verse 16, and it might be annoying to you, but I bet it was annoying to them too. Peter kept on knocking. Listen, don't stop knocking. You're at the right door. You keep on knocking. Peter's on the other side of the door. Your answer is on the other side of the door. And if you've happened to lock it because you're done and you're tired of trying and you just want to sit in your house and play it safe, then you need to remember what Jesus said in Revelation 3. Look at me. I stand at the door and I knock. If you hear, call, open the door, I'll come right in. I'll come right in, sit down, have supper with you. Wow. St. Paul's Cathedral in London hangs the picture by Holman Hunt of Jesus knocking. My grandma had a replica of this. This one is worth millions. My grandma's worth about $19. Same picture, though. And what you notice about the door is there's no handle on the outside of it. The only way that he gets in is if somebody on the inside opens it. I was out calling with my dad, and I always met a lot of cool people that way. Mr. Kendall lived about 5 miles down the road. So he was a lazy guy. He was known for his laziness, too, and he didn't mind. He'd sit inside his house in a lazy boy. He could work. He just didn't want to. He just lazy. I mean, he proved to me that the only exercise some people ever get is doing diddly squats, because that's all he ever did was diddly squats. So my dad said, we're going to get him to come to church. I said, he ain't going to come, Dad. Well, we're going to try, so we knock on the door. We know he's in there, but he's doing to us what you all do to Jehovah's Witnesses. That's what he's doing. And we know he's in there. So finally, he answers the door. And he says, come on in, boys. He knows who we are. And my dad said, Mr. Kendall, we're out inviting people to church. Just want to invite you to church. And he always gave the same answer. Well, good Lord willing. And the creek don't rise. And he said that because he lived on the other side of the creek. And he had a stone bridge that you had to cross, and it was always flooded over. So he had a built-in excuse. He literally meant it. Good Lord willing, the creek don't rise, because the creek always rose. So he knew he wouldn't be coming. So we invited him. We left. Not long after that, we had rain like we hadn't had forever. I mean, just poured day after day, like it did here a few weeks ago, where just, I mean, everything flooded. So that Sunday, we get to church. There's Mr. Kendall. Of all times. And me and my dad were like, man, it's great to have you here, dude. And he's like, you ain't gonna believe this. He said, listen, during that storm, some trees blew down upstream and dammed up my creek. And the creek didn't rise. And I thought, the Lord is telling me I gotta be in church today. That's a true story. One of my best friends in my previous church was Emma Steinmetz. She was 9 years old. And she got leukemia. She's an absolute sweetheart. She would sing at church sometimes. She had a cute little voice. And her mom asked me to sing at her funeral one of the songs she sang at church for the last time. I'm not going to sing it today, but she sang, Jesus, I heard you had a big house where I'd have a room of my own. And Jesus, I heard you had a big yard big enough to let a kid roam. And Jesus, I heard you had a closet with just the right size that I wear. And Jesus, I just want to tell you, I sure would like to go there. If I were to introduce you to Emma, and I'm one who believes I'll have that opportunity, I do believe that. If she does for you in heaven what she's done for all of us on earth, she would meet you with a big smile, and then she would immediately put your hand on her chest over her heart. And she would say, "Feel that?" She would say, "That's how I know Jesus is living inside of me." She said, "Because every day I can feel him knocking. As long as your heart's beating, Jesus is knocking. As long as you're living, another opportunity, today, Sunday morning, walk this aisle, Jesus is knocking." And I'm telling you this morning, he wants you to open the door. It's God's will that you open. Good Lord willing, you will open the door whether the creek rises or not. Amen.